Hi there, I'm Deb Crow, and I want to welcome you to Season 4 of Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast where we connect, learn, and laugh together with authentic and courageous leaders from all over the globe. You will learn from leaders you haven't even met yet. You will gain new tools to add to your leadership toolkit, because leadership belongs to all of us. It is not measured by stature or title. So please pull up a chair and listen in. This is the Imperfect Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. Welcome back to Imperfect. I love saying that word, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. And I'm so delighted today to welcome Claire Chandler to the show. Claire, I'm so excited that you're here, and I'm so delighted that you wanted to be on the show. So welcome.
Thank you. I am honored to be here.
You have so much talent and expertise. So share with our listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I'm an executive leadership advisor. I formed my company, Talent Boost, in September of 2013. So I am 10 plus years in on my business owner journey. I actually started my entrepreneurial journey 2 years before that and kind of stumbled through those first couple of years figuring out what I wanted to build a business and a brand around. And prior to that, I spent about 20 years within the walls of corporate America and sort of, you know, jumped free and leaped into the entrepreneurial unknown. And ironically, now that is my bread and butter client is executive leadership within corporate America. So it's a very abridged version of kind of how I got here today.
And it's a great story. And I'm excited to unpack a few things with you. So my first question is, you talk about being a corporate survivor, which I love just the way you've coined that phrase. We've had many, many of your friends and colleagues on the show who have deemed that same label, if you will. But talk about, when did you finally draw the line in the sand and get the grit to say, I'm tapping out and I think I'm going to pack up my transferable skills and I'm going to help leaders like myself to do this the right way?
That transformational moment, and I call it that intentionally because I think if you talk to any entrepreneur, when they describe what propelled them into this entrepreneurial journey, most, if not all of them, have this transformational moment. Mine happened in 2011. I was still a corporate full-time employee. I was a vice president of human resources at the time, traveling like crazy. You know, three weeks out of every four, I was in a different city, you know, the whole racket. And I received a great gift. And you're going to call me crazy when I tell you what the gift was. I was diagnosed with cancer. And it forced me to go from 150 miles an hour to zero, to take a month off of work. I didn't even check email for the first 3 weeks of the 4 weeks I was on leave, which was unheard of. I was leading a team. They happened to be a phenomenal team. So I literally could let everything go and let them handle everything, which they did like the champions that they were. And it's interesting because, as you said, I'm a self-professed corporate survivor. I am also a cancer survivor. I'm cancer-free now. But I have to say, there were times in that corporate experience where I learned a tremendous amount, but it was harder to conquer than cancer. So I lead with that when I say I'm a corporate survivor and a cancer survivor, because there are days, there are years, there are phases that you go through in a corporate career where you're not sure you're going to get through to the other side. And while battling cancer was daunting, I never really doubted that I and my family and my support structure and my faith and my doctors were going to help see me through it.
Okay, so disclaimer, we did not know each other before this interview today.
Nope.
Okay, so here's the goosebumps and the serendipitous moment. Oh my goodness. So I was a medical case manager, Claire, and I had five executives that were given to me, and I looked at it as a reprieve. I didn't have to go to court and testify on a workplace or an auto insurance. They were on stress, and I was so good at getting people back to work. From the day I got the five referrals to 10 months later,
I lost 3 VPs and 2 CEOs to cancer.
Wow.
So the bridging of the gap for me was my coach saying, what are you going to do with this gift? I'm grieving. And I closed my case management practice. I grieved and I moved into coaching. And if you had said that to me 15 years ago, I would have said, Claire, come on. So to hear you say this, I'm covered in goosebumps. I feel this beyond a visceral level. We're at the cellular level right now. And I continue to bask in the serendipitous lines that keep showing up on this show. And just to hear you frame that, I'm a corporate survivor and a cancer survivor. Just know how much that sentence warms my heart. And to see that you've moved into a similar space to help others not get to that level. So, oh, Claire, we got goosebumps on goosebumps today. Wow. And how lucky are the companies and the people to hear your story? And we need more of us, Claire.
100%. You know, I find, and I didn't recognize it all throughout the journey, but I can see it now. You know, the cancer, which I am clear of now, thankfully, is the gift that keeps on giving. I don't think, first of all, had I not gotten cancer, I don't know that I would have left corporate. I don't know that I would have had that wake-up call of life is too short. You really need to play it full out. You need to pursue a passion that fulfills you. But I also don't know that I would have shown up the way that I do with my clients to the depth and to the level and to the, you know, depths of vulnerability and transparency that I do. It sort of gave me permission to drop the guards, throw out the script, and really, you know, truly be real with my clients and give them a place where they can be just as real, because that's where the breakthroughs happen. So yeah, it was a gift. It continues to be a gift. It is the reason I have the perspective that I do, and that I don't really pull punches when I give guidance to my clients.
I love it. It's beyond serendipitous. I don't even have a word.
No, that's a good word. I love that word.
Okay, my second question has permanent residency on the show. I've asked every leader from leader number one, and I think we're pushing 270. What imperfections does Claire bring to her beautiful, now heart-centered leadership in this new role? You talked about a couple of the heart-centered leadership qualities of authenticity and vulnerability. What imperfections do you pack up and bring as well?
I love, first of all, I love the fact that your focus, your theme of your podcast is imperfect and imperfection. When I speak to leaders and when I sort of bang the drum around authenticity and vulnerability, I constantly refer to leaders as fellow humans who are beautifully flawed. And I am absolutely no exception. I am probably the most flawed person in the room when I walk into a room, you know, with my clients. And that is what makes those experiences so unique, so personalized, so customized. The way that I show up is I have finally gained the confidence to lean into my imperfections and to own them. I think for so long, coming out of corporate, you know, corporate expects you to fit within a certain mold, to look a certain way, to act a certain way. And while I had a very successful career and I was being groomed for an executive track and all of these things, I was also from time to time cautioned to tone down the goofiness. I'll tell you a quick story, if you wouldn't mind. I was probably about a year or so before I left. I was walking down the hall. It was one of the weeks of the four in a month that I was actually in my corporate office. And I was going to my office and my boss stopped me and he said, you need to tone down your walk. And I said, like, what? And he goes, your walk, it's so bouncy. It's so happy. And people are starting to wonder if you're up to something, like if you know something they don't. And this was the same man whose pearls of wisdom were things like, you know, try not to be so goofy when you walk into the boardroom and you do a presentation. You know, it was all those sorts of things. And, you know, spoiler alert, I didn't tone down anything. In fact, it reinforced for me that that was part of my uniqueness, that I was finally letting it show. And I think one of the things that, you know, that gift of cancer was, what was I waiting for to actually pursue a path that was much more in alignment with my unique flaws, my unique imperfections, my unique personality? And so, you know, it's all of those things that I look back on with such gratitude, because I think if those types of interactions, if that gift of cancer, if some of these other experiences didn't collide with the trajectory of my life, I might still be there.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just authored a book in November called The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook. And there's a term in there called tall poppy syndrome. Are you familiar?
I am not.
That is your boss telling you you're too goofy and your walk's too goofy, and you're going to have fun researching that on Google. And more people are talking about it now. And I'm grateful that you shared that story. And I hope you're even goofier now and got a little bit more of a spring in your step than you had before. I can't relate or even fathom, because I was told I'm too gregarious. That, hey, if I'm going to be called anything, I'll take gregarious.
Worst things to be called, for sure.
Too smiley, too happy, too bouncy, too loud. I laugh too much, all the things. And that was in my mid-20s, early 20s, right after my dad died. And it was a big pause, and it took someone special in my life to say, go start your own company at 24. And here I am 34 years later. So,
you know, can I just pause for a minute and say good for you? Because to lose your dad in your early 20s and to come out of that, and the biggest criticism people around you had was that you were too happy, you were too bouncy.
Yeah.
You had a choice to make on how you were going to show up after something like that. So good for
you. You know, for me, it was like survival mode. I had my own apartment, a car payment, all the things, and no support. And what I gained in that moment was what needed to sit over top of the emotional intelligence that I got really quick at 21, because that was, you know, to get the last night with my own dad. That was my whole life lesson in a three-hour conversation. So the emotional intelligence was locked and loaded. And then that move was like, oh, okay, I need the emotional resilience to lock arms to do this. And it was like tunnel vision, which entrepreneurs were all good at. Like, you tell me what you want to do and I'll get you there. I may not have it all figured out, but let's start, because that's the hardest part. And let's get things done, even if they're not perfect. I love messy and imperfect. And I mean, it's learning opportunities at its best, right?
And it's your own, right? I mean, I think one of the reasons that we entrepreneurs love this lifestyle, which other people might say that they envy, but it actually scares them because it's so unpredictable. You really get to do it your own way. And you live or die by the consequences of that uniqueness, of that imperfection.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I love it. I love it. I wouldn't trade it.
Me either. Okay, question number three. How can leaders, and again, I'm happy for you to give me a corporate vantage point and maybe anything that's changed now that you're out doing it Claire's way as an entrepreneur. How can leaders shape better cultures today and really drive that business success? So the underlying message is, how can leaders be kind and heart-centered and still meet their profit but put the people first?
So here's the good news that leaders really need to lean in and listen to what I'm about to say, because this is entirely within their control. And leaders like us entrepreneurs are control freaks, right? Let's just call it what it is. I absolutely believe that leaders shape culture. Mm. A lot of organizations have this myth that culture just bubbles up organically, or it's formed from the ground up and it is somehow crowdsourced. And it can be if you're not paying attention. If you are not being intentional about the culture you're trying to build and defend and nurture and amplify, it can absolutely bubble up in ways just like cracks in a foundation, in ways that don't support that infrastructure, that pursuit of your mission. And so the good news for leaders is they have the most direct impact on the culture that you're shaping. They are culture shapers. And the best way to do that is to stop over-indexing on the bottom line results, the financial performance, because that is a lagging indicator. And if you're constantly looking backwards, it's really hard to make sure that you're going in the right direction going forward, right? And so I think that is lesson one, is leaders need to understand that they shape culture. And the other part of that is, you know, the definition of a leader is that people actually follow you. Mm-hmm. If you turn around and people are not following your lead, they're not catching on to your message, they're not understanding where you're trying to go, and they're not following you, by definition, you're not a leader. And so leaders also need to understand that the best way to get people to follow them is not through some sort of command and control system. That's so 1990s, right? It is really about connecting with the people that are trying desperately to follow them on a human level first. Mm-hmm. And how do we do that? Well, we acknowledge that we're imperfect. We acknowledge that we're beautifully flawed. And we acknowledge that we have as many questions as we might have answers. And the reason that we have a team around us is because we're not supposed to have all the answers. We're not supposed to do everything ourselves. And we're not supposed to figure it all out. And so I think leaders feel daunted at times and feel like culture is a nice to have. Not only is it a strategic imperative, they are in the driver's seat in terms of shaping it the right way.
Absolutely. So well articulated, and just an eloquent sense, especially because you've come and seen it from both sides. Okay, my last leadership question. How can organizations grow on purpose?
Oh, see, now you're tapping into my that's like my love language when it comes to my business, right? So grow on purpose is one of my three core values as a business. The first, which won't surprise you now that I've shared that story, is own your walk. I truly believe that people, if they are going to live a life of passion, whether it's on an entrepreneurial track or as a full-time employee, you have to own what is unique about you. Yeah. And really lean into that. The second one is feed your passion, because again, I think life is too short. That is the gift that cancer gave me. And it obviously showed you that if we are not feeding the passion, if we are not doing things that rev us up and light us up from the inside out, we are holding back the impact we can make on the world. And that third value is grow on purpose. Simon Sinek said it best. He has done so much thought leadership around this concept of starting with why. And that businesses that set themselves apart not only understand what they do and build processes around how to get that work done, but they deeply understand and are connected to why they are in business in the first place. And so through my years, both as an entrepreneur and a corporate advisor, as well as rising through the ranks within corporate America, I have built a methodology known as growth on purpose that really helps organizations and leaders from the inside out grow in a more sustainable way by bringing in the right talent the right way, mm-hmm. nurturing them throughout their career so they can actually be the engine that fuels your growth.
I love that. I know this won't be our last conversation, Claire Chandler. The people that I meet on this show, my goodness. Okay, I'm going to switch to my Fab Four.
Love it.
Four rapid questions, just whatever's sitting on the top of that brilliant mind. First question. Name a word or a phrase that shows up daily in your leadership language.
Purpose.
Shocking. How did I know you were going to say that? Name a book that you've read at any juncture in your life. What's the name of the book? What's the title and why was it impactful?
You've probably gotten this one before, but it still resonates with me. Dare to Lead, Brené Brown. You know, she is the poster child for leading with vulnerability and getting even the most hard-nosed executives to lean into their imperfection.
One of my faves, just my hero. Okay, third question. I got to give you some context. I'm granting you a wish. You get to have dinner with any leader of your choice. Now, this leader may be living or maybe they've passed away. Who are you having dinner with and what is the dinner conversation?
So I'm going to say Theodore Geisel, who is more well known as Dr. Seuss.
Oh, yes.
And I say that for a couple of reasons. When I was applying to colleges back in the day, we didn't have this universal application and we had these essays. And there was an essay question built around that exact premise. Who would you want to have dinner with? What would you talk about? And I picked Dr. Seuss for, I think, slightly different reasons then. But he was always sort of, as an author, as a character, as a as an inspirer of children, always resonating with me. And I think now that I am, at least on paper, an adult, I think he is still someone that I would love to break bread with, because he is someone who absolutely lived the philosophy of owning his goofy personality, making up words, making up language, and illustrating stories around that that have stood the test of time.
One of my favorite books, Oh, the Places We Will Go.
Right? I love
that. That's, he's been brought up on the show before. I love that. Well, before we finish out the show, I just want to say what a delight it is to meet you and hear your story, and congratulations on being a cancer survivor. I also join you in that rank. So powerful sisters beyond measure. And absolutely. I'm going to ask you to finish the show by finishing this sentence. Heart-centered leadership is?
Beautifully flawed, tremendously authentic, and the only way to live.
Thanks so much for joining me today on Imperfect, the Heart-Centered Leadership Podcast. I hope you've enjoyed the show today and have learned some new tools for your leadership toolkit from our amazing heart-centered guest. If you like the show, feel free to give us a rating and a review, and we always welcome your feedback anytime. If you're ready to master the art of heart, my new book, The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook, is now available on Amazon, or you can click the link below in our description.